This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Raise Your Game and I'm Tasha Fusil. Managing money is a key factor that determines success and life satisfaction. Intelligence and education can only go so far if you don't develop and practice the right financial principles. Raymond Gabriel, the author of Money Quotient, recommends a few ways that anyone, young or old, can cultivate the right mindset for wealth and financial breakthrough. When it comes to managing finances, many people know the right thing to do, but they still can't empower themselves to do it. Raymond explains why.
It's a matter of habits, Tasha. A lot of people, they want to be wealthy, they want to be rich, but they haven't got the right habits in place. And people were not taught to form those habits when they were young. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the major issue.
How then do most people form those financial habits?
I think a lot of people, they form those habits by accident. It's not by design. You know, they go through a bad financial patch and then they start learning about finance. They make some mistakes and then they try and turn it around. It's unfortunate. But I think financial intelligence needs to be more by design. It has to start young. And the younger the child that you have or the younger the person you are and you learn this, the better it is for you. You've got to look at, even if you're an adult, what you can educate yourself on, what you can learn, what you can pick up. And I think the most important thing is that your financial plan needs to be linked to goals, your own personal goals, where you want to be in the future.
Can you give me an example of how one might form a financial habit that's based on design?
Let's say, for example, you start off with goals. You want to own your first house, okay? And you put a three-year target to it, or you want to make your first $1 million by a certain age. Now, you have to live that goal every day. So you've got to change your financial lifestyle, your financial habits. Everything has to be aligned towards that goal or meeting that goal. You would cut down expenditure. You would cut down purchase decisions. Instead of buying a car that's very expensive and looks cool, you might want to reduce that so that, because you're keeping that goal of a house or $1 million in mind. So you adjust your lifestyle every day. And we have something called a tracking system in our book. You can take it, you can read it. It's also available online for free. And it's just 5 minutes a day. So it helps you stay on track towards daily towards that financial goal. Most of the time when you set goals or people set goals, they only look at it when it comes to the end of the year. Okay, I'm not there yet. This was something I wanted to do. It's always a dream that's far away. But if you live your goal daily, you have a much better chance of getting there. So that's what I mean when you're putting a structure or designing a financial plan towards a goal.
Requires discipline then.
I think it just requires 5 minutes a day. I mean, it's very simple. I like to make things very simple in a book. You know, not something where you have to think about and work through and think, how am I going to get there? But if it's something that you can just do 5 minutes a day, put aside 5 minutes a day when you come back from work, when you're in the home, before you have your dinner, just settle it, you know, get it done 5 minutes a day. Mm. I think it's easy. So I don't think discipline works because a lot of us, you know, are so busy with different things. But I think simplicity works. And that's what I'm going for.
Right. Okay. You know, as you said, it starts with the parents, right? Most, if not all children rely on their parents to teach them about developing these habits. But is this something that most parents are aware of?
I don't know what about you, but when we were younger, a lot of our parents told us, you know, you need to save money, you need to save money, you need to save money. But when we grew up, somehow or other, sometimes with some parents, we saw our parents living something else. Mm. They talk about saving, but they're not really modeling it. Or the why was not told. Mm. Some of our parents were good. They actually saved, but they didn't explain to the kids why this is important. What are the consequences of not doing it? You know, and you can keep telling a child to do something and keep telling them. And most children, if you just tell them what to do, it goes in 1 year and comes out another year. You need to engage them. You need to tell them why. Because most kids are very intelligent, so they need to know why. And I think it needs to be linked towards their future, you know, that in their future, if they want to achieve something, if they want to start up their first business, if they want to start up their first company, they want to be successful, they want to be their own boss, it's so critical that they understand finance and managing their own personal finance because it's very much linked towards that goal.
I guess it just seems like quite a serious topic to broach when you're trying to teach something as complicated as finance to your children. But you say simplicity is key.
Simplicity is key. I think, I was just thinking about an approach, you know. I think the more fun you make it, like when my daughters were 3 or 4, whenever we went to the shop, you know, we made them pay. Mm. You know, so they pay, then we teach them how to count, so they count the money back. Even the shopkeepers love it because it's like this small kid, you know, trying to count money and give it to them.
Yeah.
But you're engaging them in what you're doing. We talk about financial decisions over dinner. If you're going to make a new investment, if we've made some money from an investment, we talk about it, we share it with the kids. So it's always permeating that atmosphere with finance, and it's something easy,
right,
something fun, you know, something that anybody can do. It's that kind of atmosphere we want to create at home. And I think all parents can do that as well. So it doesn't have to be complicated, simple. You know, talk about it. Think about how you can engage your child at different age groups. Like for a 3 or 5 year old, my 5 year old has started her first business. She hand makes cards with her mother, and 50% of what she earns goes towards an orphanage. You know, so she puts aside money for it. 40% is for her. She picks a toy that she wants and she uses that 40% towards it. 10%, I believe, in giving away your money, tithing or giving it away for charity. So that's a principle we practice as well. So it's easy. I mean, a 5.5 year old, you can do it.
And if you were to explain the concept of financial intelligence to a young child, how would you describe it?
I would get them to learn terms, basically. And for me, financial intelligence is about acquiring, managing, multiplying, and distributing wealth. You know, so you must learn how to acquire wealth, and that's why we teach them. You know, maybe you can start up a business part-time. You can use your capability that you have, monetize it. You read about kids on the internet, you know, 15 years old, they've done amazing things online and they've become multimillionaires. So there's no limits to what a kid can do, and no limit to any person, whatever age they are at as well. And then you've got to be able to manage it. You know, you've got to be able to keep that wealth, multiply it, choose the right avenues where you can invest it. We do write a little bit about investments and how you can get kids involved in investing with you. So you can learn, they can learn, you can learn, you can work with them. And distributing a portion of it, because I believe that wealth must be for a cause, not just for yourself. So I think that's what personal intelligence is in a nutshell, if you want me to explain it.
That was a fine explanation.
Thank you.
Delayed gratification is the first chapter in your book, Money Quotient.
Right.
What does delayed gratification have to do with our financial habits?
Oh, I think a significant step. Because most people who come for financial courses, even the courses we do for adults, they want to do a lot of things. They want to invest, they want to make, they've got goals, they want to make their first million, they want to make their first 3 million, they want to own properties. But most of them don't even have capital to start. And that's a significant issue, you know, among young people, among older people. There's a lot of lifestyle choices that people have made that have stopped them from building significant capital for them to invest in different things. And this has become a huge problem. Delayed gratification, or delaying your what you want to purchase, living for the now but living for the future, it's a significant step. So if you can teach your child or you can teach yourself how to do it, you can probably save more money, you can probably build more capital, and you'll get wealthy faster.
And is that why you call it the cornerstone of a sound financial foundation?
Yes, and we started the book with that, you know, how you build it with the kids. And I think delayed gratification is not only in terms of financial intelligence, but even in terms of work, moving up the corporate ladder, learning things, studying, you know, everything that you're doing, it's linked to it. Because the bigger the price you pay now, the better your future is going to be, right? I think it's a principle.
Okay. Well, what do you say to those whose argument is, you have to live in the now, you know, it's all about you only have one life, so you must enjoy every moment.
I think I'm not talking about like putting aside all your enjoyment and not going out with your friends and living like a miser and having a lousy life but having a lot of money. But I'm talking about a balance of both. You know, if you overdo one and you forget about the other, you're not going to have a holistic life. You know, you only live one life. Why live 5 years, enjoy 5 years, and then suffer for the rest of your life paying back what you live for that 5 years? Why not live a consistent good life for 50 years or 60 years? You know, you have enough, you've made the right choices, you are enjoying yourself, but you're still growing financially, you're growing in terms of life, you have a good life. I think that balance is important.
For someone who's going to be relatively new to this idea of practicing delayed gratification, what would you suggest for them to be able to develop and apply this practice?
If you look at every purchase decision that you're going to make, just keep an awareness of it. First thing you need to do is define a goal. What do you want to achieve with your finances? Where do you want to be in 3 years, in 5 years, in 20 years, in 10 years? You know, define those kind of goals. I think a yearly goal, a 5-year goal, a 10-year goal, and a 20-year goal. And for those of us who want to think a bit longer, maybe your retirement as well. Where do you want to be in these stages in your life? and then live every day according to that goal. So if you want to make a purchase decision, like I was talking about a car, many young people today, they want to buy a cool car. They don't want to buy a car that gets them from one place to another. But why not make that decision now so that you have enough to live your goal in the future? I think it's important. If you're going out with your friends and you can blow ₱1,000 on one night, you know, you can. It's a good party and everybody's having fun. But why not make that decision in relation to a goal that you want to have in 1 year? So if you keep living your goals every day, you make your decisions every day according to your goals, very quickly, with the small steps, you'll be achieving those goals and actually having a lot of fun in the process.
All right, I'm with Raymond Gabriel talking about his book, Money Quotient. When we return, we'll talk about emotional spending and how it leads to us living beyond our means. This is Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9. Good morning, you're listening to Raise Your Game. My name is Tasha Fusil and I'm speaking to Raymond Gabriel. Raymond has a book called Money Quotient that looks at some lessons and principles that we can apply to develop healthier financial habits, whether it's for children or adults. Raymond, why is it important to consider the emotional attachments that we have to spending?
I wrote about that because some of us, or some people, their spending habits are linked to an emotional release. So they shop to feel good. We buy certain things. It's not just women, men as well. It's both. Okay, some men have got gadgets. They've got things that they enjoy. So a lot of what we spend on is to make us feel good. Now, if we can find alternative ways to make us feel good, let's say getting involved in sports, getting involved in nature, because these things give you an emotional high as well. It's proven, you know. They're good chemicals released when you have a good workout. But even the more you get into it, you have a healthier lifestyle, but you also have more money that you can grow, that you can multiply, that you can invest, you know, that you can do those things with. So the more money you spend on gratifying yourself, coming back, it's linked to chapter one as well, because you feel good. I had a stressful day, let me go out and shop. So you blow ₱300 on a handbag. Or the more you do that, you don't live your goals daily, you're not going to achieve your financial freedom. I recommend switching, not trying to control it, but switching into something else. For example, get your high from something else. Choose a hobby, choose something that's, you know, take up cycling, for example, go running or get a group of friends together, you know, do some exercise together, you know, play badminton together, play tennis together. Get something that is not actually related to you spending so much money and putting you in a place where you're going to spend so much money, but get your high from something else, you know. Get together with a group of friends, have a good chat. It's just as fun as you walking alone and shopping, maybe even more fun. I don't know.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people develop their hobbies based on things that require money.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. And it's also important to teach your kids to have that same thinking, that their high comes from not getting new toys all the time or buying new things, but from other things, you know, from family activities, spending time together, joking together, playing board games together, you know. A lot of kids nowadays are hooked on computer games, they're doing things individually, but what if a family gets together and actually plays Monopoly together or those games? It's still fun for the kids, you know, and they learn stuff while you do it.
Can you share some examples of how these initial relationships are even formed?
In terms of money and habits? Or
Money and our emotions.
Okay. When we look at a child, a young child, sometimes as a parent, you see the parents spending on things and you tell the child, oh, mommy had a bad day or dad had a bad day and, you know, I bought this, you know, how do I look? Do I look good? You know, and I feel good. Yeah, it's something. So a child begins to see spending being related to an emotional release. Okay, and they have that habit. And then if you had a bad day, or the child has a bad day, say, don't worry, okay, I'll take you out. Okay, pick a toy because you had a bad day. So the child begins to form this thinking pattern that, okay, if I have a bad day, so I spend money, I buy something for myself, I feel better. So it begins to be formed that way. It's very subtle, you know. But eventually then your lifestyle derails your goals. And whenever you have, and I think in a week, everybody has their ups and downs and they have their good days and their bad days. And some of us even make decisions, like big decisions, you know. We've come to a place where we feel we need a reward. We've earned it, you know. And that's what advertising messages tell us all the time, you know. You haven't earned the right until you've driven this car or you're living in this place or you've gone for a holiday abroad. But, you know, you live beyond your means and that derails your financial goals. So I think these things, messages, influence spending habits and get us out of a financial plan that we have. Most adults are intelligent enough to know that they want to achieve something with their finance. I think it is influences and our emotions sometimes that take us away from that plan, and we've got to manage those emotions.
Right, because it is quite scary how easily influenced we are by ads and by just the spending culture.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is. There's a saying, you know, people say you got to live within your means. I don't even feel that's enough at this age. You got to live under your means. Because if you live under your means, you have more savings. More savings equals more capital. More capital means more investments. More investments means more wealth. So if you live under your means, for example, if I'm getting a salary of 3,000 or 5,000, if I can look at putting 20% aside and I live as if I am earning 20% less, that 20% can actually have a big difference in my wealth plan or my financial plan in the future.
There's a lot of, you know, in the book, at the end of each chapter, there are exercises that you give.
Yeah.
They're great, very easy to understand, and some are catered to different ages. How did you go about developing all of these exercises?
I think by applying it with kids. I've taught adults finance. I've taught children finance as well. And a lot of what you see in the book is applied to my daughter. So she's the first experiment, if you want to, or both my daughters. There are exercises there for five-year-olds. I've broken them down into three age categories, five to eight, 9 to 12, and 13 to 17 year olds. And for each level, you've got to think about the complexity of the child. What can the child understand? What can they pick up? Can they understand things with a bit more complexity? And I'm not talking about watering down your message to a child, but stretching the child, giving the child that added view or stretching his perspective on finance and challenging that child so that they can apply something and grow. Because I think we only grow when we are challenged a little bit, you know. So that's what we're trying to achieve with those exercises and catering it to different groups.
From your experience, is it more challenging to try and educate a child than it is to educate a person who has spent sort of most of their life not really practicing the most responsible habits when it comes to finance?
I think both have got challenges.
Yeah.
The first thing when you deal with children is to engage them, make it fun, you know, because the more fun it is for a child, the more they're going to apply it and learn it and receive it in a good way. We want the children to receive the message in the right way, in a fun way, and see it as something that I've picked up along the way. It's like having my first pet, you know, it was fun. It's something that I enjoyed. So I learned about finance. It was fun as well, and I want to apply it. So it's something that's part of me. For adults who have made a lot of mistakes, most of the time, they come to us after realizing that I can't live this way anymore. So there's already a realization. So it's also easy to deal with that. But there's a lot to undo. They have debt. They're labeled, you know, financially, they're in a bad place. They've got a lot of confidence issues when it comes to finance. So you've got to undo all that, especially managing debt and coming out of debt. How do you restructure it? You know, then you've got to put more pressure on yourself to come out of those situations and the mistakes that you made. I would like to work with people at a younger age, if possible, or get them to read this at a younger age so they don't make the mistakes that we made or that other adults made and get into trouble and then look for help. You know, why not be preemptive? I think being preemptive and making the right decisions early, not getting into trouble and then looking for help, is the best way to live.
You know, I really like what you said in the beginning about financial intelligence being just another component of what it means to be intelligent.
There was a researcher, I think, from Harvard called Howard Gardner, who talked about multiple intelligences and how we are gifted in different intelligences. Some of us are gifted in music, in art. Some of us can have good memories. We learn things faster. Some of us love maths, you know. So there are different levels and different intelligences that we have. But it's good to focus a child or focus on your intelligence or your gift, you know, at the same time. But financial knowledge is also an intelligence that you can acquire. Some intelligences you can learn, you know. Like kids learn music. They're not born playing the piano like a maestro, you know. They have to pick up the skills. They have to learn it. They have a gift, but they have to pick it up. But finance is something so easy. Anybody can pick it up. And I think it's an intelligence you need to develop. You need to set aside time. If you're a parent, for example, you need to look at a week that you have, no matter how busy you are, spend some time working on your children, maybe once a week or twice a week, teaching them finance, working through a project with them. Pick up examples from the book. I've got ideas there of things you can do. Work it out with them on a weekly basis. Grow with them. You know, and it's important that you set aside time to do these things, to grow that financial intelligence in your child.
That was Raymond Gabriel, the author of Money Quotient. We're giving away 3 copies of Raymond's book today. So if you'd like to get yourself one of those 3 books, write into enterprise@bfm.my with your name and mobile number.
Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.